time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
You know, the bank loan, just enough to keep your mama poor. Thought they could swipe her land.
It's a big bank.
It's too big.
That's what she said.
Now they can foreclose on Friday. So come hell or high water,
get the money to the bank on Thursday.
And then you are free and clear.
Little brother,
go get that money.
Good morning, folks! Open the drawers!
You got a gun on you, old man?
You damn right I got a gun on me. Y'all gonna steal my gun, too?
We ain't stealing from you, we're stealing from the bank.
Woo!
You hear about these bank robberies? You may get to have some fun before they send you off to the rocking chair yet.
I may have one hunt left in me.
Mama, that been a while.
3 months.
Bank breathing down her neck.
Everybody get on the ground!
Y'all been here for a while?
Long enough to watch a bank getting robbed has been robbing me for 30 years.
How'd you manage to stay out of prison for a year?
It's been difficult.
Tell them stand up!
These boys know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to raise a certain amount, that's my guess.
Let's go! Drive! Drive!
Toby.
It's a good thing you're done.
More down it.
Every step of the way.
You want a little advice? Go see your boys tomorrow.
You know, you talk like we ain't gonna get away with this.
I never met nobody got away with anything, ever.
And why in the hell did you agree to do it?
Because you asked, little brother.
Mama, take this badge off of me.
All right, think I got these boys figured.
He's got no record. He's never been arrested. He don't fit the bill, Marcus.
You may be hearing a lot of things about me and your uncle.
It's getting dark, too dark to see.
Whatever I hear, I won't believe.
No, you believe it. I did all of it.
Love you, Toby.
Mean it.
Love you, too.
You want to get us killed? Huh?
We'll be right back.
Chris Stapleton there with an evocative song and very much a country music theme that we'll have woven in, no doubt, to the latest example of Natasha Wanton and Richard Fitzwilliams doing their movie reviews and such like. You're listening to Outlaw State of Mind, of course, following the trailer for Hell or High Water, which features Captain Kirk himself. Yes, Chris Pine doing wondrous things there. And at least he survives, which is important in a movie which is inevitably problematic in all sorts of ways.
Really, really can't have that sort of spoiler. We
Richard, calm down, honestly.
No, you can't. You can't.
I'm just saying he survives. I'm not saying anything else about the whole system, but would you like to launch into a 2016 movie, which I'm sure, as I say, let's face it, Natasha, this is a movie that has already been out and about for 7 years. If you're worried then about saying things, you might as well turn around and say, look, in The Swan, Peter, the Roald Dahl person, obviously gets...
No,
exactly.
No.
I mean, Natasha, this is just deplorable. The reason that I thought that this would be interesting is I switched onto Netflix to see what they were advertising, and when this came up, I thought that it was a fascinating movie because it is so morally ambiguous. Directed by David McKenzie, we go to West Texas. It's a Western, a contemporary Western. There are two brothers. One is Toby, played by Chris Pine, and the other is Tanner, played by Ben Foster. Now, talk about different temperaments. Toby is calculating. He is also somebody who, well, he's got an ex-wife, he's got children. He doesn't want them to suffer what he's suffered, because they've had an abusive father. Their mother has, this is central to the plot, their mother has died after a long illness. Now, Howard Tanner is violent, impetuous, quite the reverse of Toby. What has to be borne in mind, however, is that it is the Texas Midland Bank, which, because of the legal situation, could foreclose on their mother's property. Oil has been discovered on the land. It's absolutely pivotal for Toby and for Tanner. Technically, they have joint possession, so that they prevent the bank from foreclosing. Now, they need money, and there's only one way to get money, and that's to rob banks. To be precise, robbing Texas Midland banks and choosing small towns. The area, this is one of the themes of this movie, the area, the whole countryside, it used to be owned, obviously it lived in, by the Native Americans. Then came the settlers, and now it's owned, or so much of it is owned, by the banks. Such population as still exists there, who desperately and deeply resent anything to do with the banks, and by linked to that is a distrust generally of law and order. Now, you've got two Texas Rangers. There's Marcus Hamilton, played by Jeff Bridges. It's a wonderful performance, a cantankerous old sardine. He's racist, he's amusing and curmudgeonly. He's got a plan in his mind of what he believes these brothers, what they're going to do next, where they're going to rob. There's also Alberto Parker, played by Jill Birmingham, who is a Native American. His ancestors owned the land. The two make a very, very entertaining pairing, because Alberto has to put up with Marcus, but they have a sort of understanding. Point is to appreciate what the robbers are going to do next, anticipating and then tracking them down. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult, because there are so many towns and so many banks. There's a shootout. Tanner kills two security guards. Now, that changes the whole pattern, and it makes the movie ever more dramatic. it's absolutely fascinating to look at the different characters involved here and look at their motivations and look also at what happens to them. And visually, it's very impressive. It's also got country and western music, which I thought enhanced it. And it's got
Richard, I have to interrupt there. Country and western music ceased to be in 1988. It's only referred to as country music now. Thank you.
Ah, very well. Country music. And also you have an amazing performance by Jeff Bridges, because this is a very rounded character. He's a superb actor, and here he's at his best because, as I say, about to retire, he nonetheless has a pretty good idea of what is likely to happen. But also, when certain events do happen, he follows. He's got a nose for the job, even if he's retired from it. There's a very dramatic ending, as one might say. Also, Chris Pine, excellent as Toby, the brains behind it. And also, you've got Ben Foster's Tanner, the very reverse, and also it could lead to problems, deep, deep, deep problems. And it's absolutely fascinating, too, to see the movie visually, how that plays out, but also the themes of greed and capitalist greed as personified by the banks, and how, in fact, that has taken over and more or less controls so much of the land. And come hell or high water, it's a very, very intriguing movie because the characters are totally believable. They're excellent performances throughout. And it is dominated with one of these gloriously idiosyncratic turns by Jeff Bridges. And I thought it was an intriguing one to mention again.
Minor correction. It's just called Hell or High Water, Richard, not Come Hell or High Water.
And it's a movie.
But thankfully, Chris Pine's character survives.
Who knows who survives in what way?
What would you give it out of 10, Richard?
Oh, this one I would definitely give 10 out of 10 because I found the characters believable. I think it's also got, it's a fascinating study in ambiguity because this robbery is taking place for a purpose. And in point of fact, you've had a different sort of robbery from the banks. There's some very intriguing scenes when it comes to money and how it's invested and where and so forth. But I wouldn't dream of going into them in a review other than to say that it is a movie that I was absolutely gripped by it. But as I say, it is totally believable. And also you've got wonderful performances. And yes, there are shootouts from time to time. But the result of that, I'm sure Alex would tell you if you let him.
No, there are a couple of people who do die, actually. Chris Pine is not one of them. I have to say, I think Richard's being a little bit overgenerous there. I'd probably rate this as a 7. I think it takes with it a lot of interesting tropes that have been used in terms of the Jesse James brothers, etc. And, of course, puts up that wonderful bastion of aspects of Hollywood where they don't like banks and yet they make so much money out of the banks. So there we are. Natasha, have you seen the trailer?
I have seen the trailer for this one, and it's interesting listening to Richard's description because it reminds me very much of a film I did see just the year after. So this obviously came out in 2016, and then they had Going in Style, which came out in 2017, and it was a very similar, this time it was old people who couldn't afford to sort of, pay their rent and own the house, and they ended up, with Morgan Freeman, and it was much more of a comedy style. This one obviously sounds much more of a serious movie. But I did really like that one and the undertones of that and the sort of morally grayness. I feel it kind of roots itself in that whole kind of Robin Hood kind of lore of, rooting for the outlaw that's kind of,
You have the same thing, Natasha, with, of course, Ned Kelly in Australia. Similar
you
kind
do
of area.
Indeed. You do indeed. He is a very interesting man. It's something that appeals to everyone universally, and I suppose that's that whole, life is hard and people have more money and, we want some of that, I guess.
Life is hard and then you die or get shot. One of those two. Sarah Huntley, is this one for you, or is it a case of It's got far too much Americana in it for me. And frankly, I can only take so much of Chris Pine as a doting father who basically has sons who ignore him.
Alex, because Fitzwilliams has given it a 10, I think I have to have a look at it. Yeah, I have to say it's not my natural go-to of the genre and style. But yes, I think I should watch it. Yes, definitely.
Well, the music is pretty good, and here's Ray Wiley Hubbard with...
So I come down from Oklahoma with a pistol in my boot, a paradise, a deck of cards, and a Bible in my suit. Come here as the cause of tears, just to cry and shame. Seven stood our eternal blood, I'm looking for a game. I double cross the state of Texas and they give me a little time. I tell myself to double cut the cards and hold scriptures in my mind. I learn to love the tumbling dice and to believe the word. Tombstones, rolling bones, beats anything I ever heard. Patience is a virtue that I don't possess. I can't deny that heaven lies beneath the cotton dress. How small a part of time we share till we hear the sound of wings. I'm lost in the dust of the chase that my life brings. Beneath his rich blue skies, I've seen the fall of man and the kingdom hidden from their eyes. I have heard the roar of thunder, I felt a lightning bolt. I went to walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take along Samuel Colt. Every night I kiss the cards and I hold them to my breast. When I see the King of Hearts, I know that I am blessed. And though my eyes are blind sometimes, I know there's something there. So when the time's at hand and I kill a man, I say a little prayer. Part of time was shared. till we hear the sound of wings. I am lost in the dust of the chase that my life brings.
Can we just have that again? What are we not allowed to call it? We have to say country.
No, yeah, country music. That's right. And indeed, it's hella high water. Rich is obviously liking to build his part by putting in added bits and pieces these days. Honestly, his financial situation also is quite fascinating because clearly he's got this thing about capitalism that's going on today. We've talked about Hell or High Water. I thought he might have gone for the Gareth Edwards creator, but no, he's decided to actually go from Hell or High Water quite simply to a trailer, which if you're not very careful and don't listen to or don't access the whole notion of showcase cinemas, where at least they've actually edited out all the cussing, has probably got more F-words in the actual trailer itself than I ever encountered in any way, shape or form at all. Hence the reason we're not featuring any trailer from Dumb Money. But what's this all about, Richard? And is it not just a case of it's the Big Short for the 21st or the 2023s?
Well, I mean, to be perfectly fair to Dumb Money is very good fun to watch. Now, that's important to say because, yes, it has the same theme as it you pointed out. I mean, it directed by Craig Gillespie, somebody who's relatively poor. Keith Gill played very well. He's a fine actor. I saw him first in There Will Be Blood, played by Paul Dano. He notices during the pandemic, and the movie set during then, that a video game retailer, GameStop, he starts watching this and he starts his own YouTube live stream to share his tips. Now, when he sinks his life savings into the stock and when social media posts start livening up, well, his life starts changing because what's happening, and you meet the way it's a fault of this movie, in a sense, that you meet too many what I would call ordinary people. This is a David versus Goliath movie, and it's certainly one that Hollywood has no problem in making, but it is very good and entertaining fun. When you meet a couple, say, or an individual, you're told their total worth. Now, when they see the chance of managing to invest on Wall Street, which normally surely is the preserve of millionaires and sometimes billionaires, why not take it? Especially when it's recommended by Roaring Kitty, which is the site that Keith Gill is able to urge his followers to invest. The whole point is you've got to invest at a certain point, and then you've got to sell at a certain point if you want to make a profit. Well, obviously, the rich and the powerful, there's a performance by Seth Rogen, one of them, I do have to say, he has the same expression right throughout the movie, which is a bit tedious. Nonetheless, it can cause them acute embarrassment. We see the way they cover up for their own. We see the way they can rig it and so forth. When it comes to Keith, he's got a wife, played by Shailene Woodley. He's got a child. His family, it's important, but I mean, he's making a lot of money. And also, you're having a lot of, and some quite entertaining characters appear, who are also benefiting from Roaring Kitty and what he suggests. The problem, I suppose, with this movie is that you meet all sorts of people, but you never really get to know them. But you do get to know Keith, and I thought his antics. It's all based on, apparently, this was true. It's supposed to have changed Wall Street. Well, it certainly altered certain practices in Wall Street. I think there's no doubt about it. It did show that the ordinary guy could, in certain circumstances, and they have to be investigated, by the way. Because it's in the pandemic, he testifies before a House committee virtually. It's one of those movies where, as I say, it's a good central performance by Paul Dano. It is a flawed movie, but it is an entertaining movie. You're speaking of someone who would not be a good amateur stock trader, and I'm unfamiliar with the lingo, the jargon, and so on. It nonetheless is. It's. I thought it was very entertaining overall, but not a movie that's, as I say, one of the greats, but definitely a movie that's, well, that's, as I say, is it's good fun, and it does tell the story, which, after all, it's serious. It's the little guy, it's the David versus Goliath theme, and from that point of view, it's worth it. I definitely am glad I saw it.
If only they'd reduce the amount of F-bombing that the narrative actually has, it might have actually had a much greater impact. But perhaps that's because Seth Rogen is in it, and maybe that's an essential part of the whole process. Sarah Huntley, as somebody who regularly drops the F-bomb on a frequent basis, what are your thoughts on this one? Is Dumb Money something for yourself?
No. It's not. It's definitely not. And I'm so sorry about my little faux pas last week. I'm not going to say it again, but that's what it was called, and it's in the West End. So I didn't think I was being naughty. I was mortified. Very sorry about it.
Look, these things happen. Some people get confused with respect to the genre of country music. Other people actually can't refrain from actually talking about Totally without any themes whatsoever, if you take that as an acronym. It's okay.
On the theme of swearing, interestingly, well, not interestingly, but it was interesting for me. I have to monitor at school when people do bits from films at what level they can do. So obviously lots of my boys love The Wolf of Wall Street because of all the F-bombing in that. Mm. And then
it'd be replaced by Dumb Money, I can guarantee, honestly.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just thinking. And so one of the things when I'm directing or teaching or being a practitioner or whatever I am, I don't know, or hopefully an actor one of these days, is that if you constantly swear in a film or a play, then the character does, it ceases to mean anything, actually. So that's one of the things I try and explain. But of course, boys just love, oh, miss, can we do that bit? And they only want to do it because there's some F-bombing in it. But one of the things I did have a nightmare about was somebody wanted to do a piece from American Psycho. And so... For all of us listening, I think it's interesting as the genres go by and the different ages and times of films, does it get more or does it get less with swearing? And I think it's about the same as it always was, really. Because when you look at...
I rather agree. You know, Alex mentions it in Dumb Money. I didn't notice it.
Okay, Richard, I think you need to probably have a hearing check on that basis. And I don't think Rhett Butler would have actually got away with it if he said, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. And it would have had so much impact in the world as we stand.
Well, what would you have done to see Pygmalion, Alex? I really wonder.
Well, said Richard, as we turn now to another Wes Anderson classic, which could critically be seen as being the ultimate synthesis of Captain Pugwash meets... the joys of the wonderment of Nicole Kidman, plus more delights of Moulin Rouge, etc. Captain Pugwash meets Moulin Rouge, I think, with lots of changing things occurring and a way in which you can break that fourth wall on a regular basis and discuss all manner of things with Ralph Fiennes, of course, in fine form, said Alex, as he turns to Natasha. What are you going to say, Natasha?
Good evening, Mr. Sugar, said the man behind the desk whose job it was to never forget a face.
Henry Sugar was 41 years old, unmarried and rich.
Strange. The following is what Henry read in the little blue exercise book.
Gentlemen, I am a man who can see without using his eyes.
He saw it, I cried. He saw that trolley. This is absolutely unbelievable. I was flabbergasted.
This is a terrific piece of information. This could change my life.
An extraordinary thing happened.
All at once, he sees through his own skin. Like an X-ray, only better, he sees everything. Henry was now almost certainly capable of making money faster than any other person in the entire world. Interesting.
His name was Henry Sugar. I think people ought to know a bit about what he has done for the world.
that I Captain Pugwash meets Moulin Rouge is an interesting way to describe it. Yeah, let's dive on in. So there's a four basically short films that have just this week been released onto Netflix, directed by Wes Anderson, as Alex has said. They're based on a collection of short stories published in 1997 by Roald Dahl. And this collection of stories was aimed at more of a sort of older audience as opposed to, you know, his younger stuff. And we've seen Wes Anderson direct some of his younger stuff. We've seen him direct Fantastic Mr. Fox, for example, back in 2009. This is a live action one. This is the four films being The Swan, The Rat Catcher, Poison, and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Now, the first three that I've mentioned are only about 17 minutes long. The longest one of these is The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, and I'm probably going to spend most of my time talking about that one because I feel like that one maybe had... I felt like I could get my teeth into that one. I thought the other ones, it was probably my favorite of the four. Now they do follow, you know, the story quite well of his short stories. And they all feature the same really, really solid cast. They've all Benedict Cumberbatch, Dev Patel, Ben Kingsley, Richard Alwadi, Ralph Fiennes. Like it was,
and
it
thankfully
was,
no F-bombing at all.
There was no F-bombing, but I feel like because they were all so bizarre, I feel like you're too busy trying to understand what's going on to register the F-bomb in these ones, because they do take a lot of following. I didn't watch
trust
these.
Trust me, Tasha, there was zero profanity. Very good stories, very interesting cinematography, zero profanity. Proving you don't have to do it.
That's good. No, I would recommend to the listener to watch, if you've got the capacity on Netflix, to watch with subtitles, because I just found that it was a bit easier to follow what was going on, particularly when you had all the scene changes. It's very clever. It's typical Wes Anderson in that it's very quirky. But there's a lot of kind of scene changes that happen. And when you've got a lot of pieces to camera, it can be sometimes a little bit tricky to kind of catch what they're saying, which is why I found the subtitles really helpful. The main one, they're all very quirky kind of bits of people's lives stories. The main one, as I say, of Henry Sugar. Henry Sugar is kind of a pseudonym for kind of like a miserly bachelor who wants to kind
and
of
he's
get
a gambler.
Rich gambling.
He's a very gambling person.
And he wants to get rich gambling. So one day he comes across this book, and it's a doctor's report in a library, and it's a report of Imdad Khan. He's played by Dev Patel, and he claims that he's been in contact with a man who could see without using his eyes. The story goes that this guy was
possibly through the hairs in his ears. I would have thought, Natasha, the hairs in his ears.
He had Ben Kingsley had some magnificent ear hair in this. That is true.
Very good.
They bandaged him all up, and he's able to perform all of these feats with completely no capacity to use his eyes. And it's a medical phenomenon. And it sort of goes on his story as how he met this guru, and how through just this simple trick of focusing for up to 3 minutes daily into a candle and focusing on one image, your mind, the minute your mind starts to wander, you have to stop and restart. And through this sort of practice, you can learn to train yourself.
Don't try it at home, dear listener. Do not try this at home. We have to say it could lead to eye damage as opposed to being able to see other sort of systems. Staring into a candle is not a sane thing to do.
It's complete baloney, but it's a very interesting story. And obviously, Henry Sugar once goes, oh, I can use this to my benefit in the casino. I can look at backs of cards and read what's on the front of it. It's a very interesting story. And it
profound in the same nature as Asteroid City was a profound commentary on society in the Western world today.
I think it is quite a profound story. I think that there are, obviously, there are sort of meanings behind all four of them. I found that this one was probably the happiest and maybe the nicest of the
he
four.
Gives money away. He gives money away without people talking about being dumb money or having to rob banks for the whole thing. He gives the money away. Only the police officer gets upset, played by Ralph Fiennes.
I do. Just to mention, just so as well, so that you don't get confused, the actors do play different characters in this as well. Just before it, just so that you don't get confused when you see an actor playing several roles. But no, it was a good story. I did enjoy it. I'm probably gonna go to a seven. I just because I found it very enjoyable, but and very unique. But I also feel like it was a little bit confusing in some places, maybe. And I feel like that might be quite hard to follow for some people. It did very well at Venice Film Festival. So that's always a really positive sign. Overall, yeah, the wonderful story of Henry Sugar, I think, is my favorite of the four. I would probably recommend that one to start with, because I feel like that's the most relatable and easily accessible to all
The
the viewers.
Swan is quite good as well.
The Swan is good. It gets a bit weird. It gets a bit weird in some places. I don't know.
We're
It kind
never
of
quite
lost
sure in
me.
terms of does he live or does he not at the end, but there we are, you know.
Yeah, the ending is very ambiguous with that one. I think at least with this one, you're on solid ground in that you kind of know where you're going with it. So I would
And the rat
recommend
catcher
the
with
longer
Ralph
view.
Fiennes as the rat catcher, also impressive.
Right, he's brilliant in all of them. All of the actors, I think, really sell the characters very well. It's very convincing. And I think Sarah, you would find it very interesting in that the sort of discipline that the actors have to have in doing it with the sort of the breaking pieces to camera and the sort of the way that it's sort of narrating what other actors are doing, and it's very interesting. I
You
think
can
from
throw in
a
Jack and
technical
Ori as well, after a fashion. You know, Jack and Ori meets Pat Captain Pugwash, meets Moulin Rouge.
but no, I think Sarah, you'd find the technicalities of it quite interesting from from an actor's perspective. I would be interested to hear what you would think of it.
Sarah, is this one for you?
Yes, it is, because being my age, I remember being
You're
captivated.
younger than Ralph Fiennes.
Well, yes, I am actually. When there was the Natasha before you were born, they had Tales of the Unexpected, which I used to love watching with my brother and scaring myself to death when my parents went out. Because they'd gone out the evening and we're just about old enough to be left. And then we'd watch it and go, oh, and sort of scare one another going upstairs. In those Tales of the Unexpected, not only were they scary, but as you say, the how Roald Dahl is with not quite explaining the plot. So it's not just you don't know who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, or good woman, bad woman, but you're not actually sure what sometimes the moral of the story is. Is there one? You know, maybe you can get away with it. So I'd love to watch this, and I love the actors in this. And just the still that you've shown the listeners, it looks really, yes, that would be
I'd
ooh.
go 8.5 for this one personally. Certainly, of the three texts that we've looked at, by far the most useful, and indeed, thankfully, an absence of profanity, which is very good. Okay, so moving on to again a sad loss that we've actually had in the world this week, which I think we want to obviously may pay true tributes to, etc. Yes, the world has lost the originator of Ilya Kuryakin. That would be David McCallum, a Scottish actor, musician, of course, gained wide recognition as being Ilya Kuryakin, but then obviously went on to be in Colditz. I went on to be in Mosquito Squadron and a whole heap of other things, including The Invisible Man and NCIS. But of course, he was Ducky. 90 years of existence that he actually had. And I know, Richard, you'd be very keen to obviously say David McCallum, clearly an important person, and thankfully never had to suffer from the curse of Dumbledore. I say that deliberately because if you're ever offered the role of Dumbledore, run for the hills. You don't play Dumbledore and live to tell the tale, as Richard Harris and Michael Gambon would say. Anyway, over to you, Richard.
Yes, Sir David McCallum, sadly missed, and indeed, you're more familiar with his career than me. And Sir Michael Gambon, too, very sad loss. 5 decades for this Irish-born actor, and various series, one of May Gray, one of this Dennis Potter singing detective. I mean, his extraordinary career. I mean, stage, small and large screen. As Dumbledore, yes, in 6 out of the 8 Harry Potter
If
movies. I
only he
mean,
hadn't done that, he'd still be with us today, I'm sure, but never mind.
well, he had the benign quality, and also he had the presence, a huge man, apparently, and certainly someone who enjoyed whether it was antique guns or whether it was apparently fast cars. He was a great one for that. But on stage, there's no doubt at all that I saw him as Galileo at the National, and that has been considered as a possible career best for him. It was very difficult to make that decision. He was a particularly fine Volpone, who, of course, in Ben Jonson's play, is a villain. Yes, a personal favourite. Oh, goodness. Skylight as the capitalist versus Leah Williams's teacher. They've had a relationship, but he's betrayed her. Fascinating in that. One of David Hare's finest plays, and in Harold Pinter's No Man's Land, in the Ralph Richardson role as Hearst, the extraordinary rich figure who lives on in Hampstead, and indeed he and Spooner, played by Richardson and Gielgud in the original, have this extraordinary relationship. I thought he was excellent. And also as the owner of, with dark secrets in Julian Fellowes' Gosford Park. So, I mean, an extraordinary career. I saw him in a few of his major roles. I mean, others will have enjoyed him in a whole variety of parts. Yeah, absolutely amazing.
Although, as I said, I would probably prefer David McCallum. Nevertheless, over to yourself, Sarah. I recall Michael Gambon when I first saw him in The Singing Detective, of course, the TV version of the Dennis Potter scenario. In fact, it was Dennis Potter who wrote it for television. What are your thoughts, Sarah, on both David McCallum and indeed Michael Gambon?
Well, gutted. I mean, I suppose as you get older, it really affected me when they both went this week, because so much of your life, your memories are wrapped up with what they did with their acting career, and it takes a bit of you away. But The Singing Detective, I thought, was absolutely fantastic. And when that first came out, Alex, that was cutting edge, wasn't it? We hadn't had television like that before. I think Michael Gambon was a very generous actor, they both were fantastic. I mean, I love them both to bits with their work. I went to see Galileo. That's another one with Michael Gambon that I really, really remember. And it's interesting, isn't it, when you look back and some of the things that they've done, how profound they are and the messages that they will hopefully forever leave with us all. But yeah, I'm actually very sad about, very, very sad.
But perhaps we need to celebrate their lives as opposed to simply mourning their passing and realise that we can at least celebrate the fine work that they've left us. Because let's face it, it's something which is going to happen to all of us in the near future.
I know, Alex, but there is always a period when it first happens where you have to be sad, and then you can move on to saying, wow, that's forever here. I would just like to add, this week I've been a busy girl and I went to see David Mitchell talk about his new book, Unruly, interviewed by Ben Elton, which is all about history in the past and was basically written in lockdown, and he's added to it about naughty people.
It's fair to say, Sarah, that Ben Elton is not number one with our current Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, who's been highly critical of his propensity to actually criticise some of Suella's very caring approaches to life, Rwanda, and indeed immigration. But that's by the by. Natasha, obviously, this chitter-chatter is clearly Northern Hemisphere-based. Any thoughts that you'd like to say, or is it a case of, well, somebody had to go at some time, especially when they played Dumbledore, which, of course, David McCallum hadn't, but he did live until he was 90.
I'm going to be one of those people that I'm not really that aware, I don't think, of David McKellen's work, but I definitely will go and have a look at it. It might be that I've sort of seen him and I sort of don't know, because I might have seen some of his earlier stuff when I was younger, but I'm definitely going to have a look.
The Sixth Finger in the Outer Limits. Ducky is NCIS.
He sounds like
Sapphire and Steel, or Steel in Sapphire and Steel, with Joanna Lumley.
I will definitely go and have a look. I'm not
Natasha, and for people that haven't watched it, you must go back and watch Sapphire and Steel. If you liked the Roald Dahl that you've just watched, then watch Sapphire and Steel, because it's that. I think that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I am being positive, Alex. Sorry, I'm not being all grief mourned. Sorry.
No, it's very true, and you're absolutely right. PJ Hammond's Sapphire and Steel, for the six adventures that it ran with Joanna Lumley and, of course, David McCallum. Absolutely. One of the hidden gems of British television, which you can find through BritBox and so on. So there we are, duly celebrated in all sorts of wondrous ways. And that pretty much brings us to an end. No royal news whatsoever, thankfully. But from that point of view, another movie thing has come to its natural closure. We will hopefully be back and find out what Fia van den Bogert's birthday party was like, whether it was hers, whether it was somebody else's. We just don't know. Kathy, I think, is still actually in the Ukraine. Sarah, did you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to add, I was terribly scared last Sunday evening. I went to see Death in Venice. Oh my goodness, it's really scary. And Natasha had said, oh, I got it from the beginning. And I was sitting there thinking, oh yeah, I'll get it from the beginning. No, I didn't. And I thought...
I didn't, may I just join you? I didn't, Natasha got it, I didn't either.
No, I thought it was a brilliant film, not particularly traditional, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And lots of my pupils are going, do you know, it's a 12, do you want to be really, really scared? And they all go, yes. I said, go and see that. I just thought, oh, and when the light comes up at the end, you think, oh, thank goodness. I was literally flinching, and I didn't want to walk back from the cinema on my own, because I just thought, if there's any crash or bang, I'm going to have a heart attack. I really thought Death in Venice, guys, thanks for you making me go and see that, because I really, really enjoyed it. And it is really enjoyable, but very scary, very, very scary.
Well, I have said you've got to beware of that mustache at the best of times, but still Kenneth Branagh does do a fine job with respect to the whole thing. So to Natasha Wanton, to Richard Fitzwilliams, and to Sarah Huntley, and you, dear listener, keep watching the movies.